Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil in the ones and twos, and Sherry. Our special guest today is Hamilton County Commissioner, the president of the commission, Stephanie Dumas. Looking forward to having her on the podcast for the first time.
She's a trailblazer. She's a trailblazer, the first Black Hamilton County Commissioner, I believe, the first Black female Hamilton County Commissioner in Ohio. A trailblazer.
Absolutely. And I got to say,
part of the Democratic female Hamilton County Commission, too, yeah. Speaking of trailblazing.
And I got to say this, and we'll let her tell her story here coming up here momentarily, but I got a lot of respect for the fact that how she came up through, Forest Park, the commission and vice mayor and mayor there, coming up through not through the establishment, the big political establishment, and how she won in 2018. No one gave her a chance, except she believed in her, and the majority of the voters believed in her.
Plus, there's a big question on everybody's mind. Yeah. We'll ask her. So stay tuned. We know the big question. Is she running again? So just let's stay tuned. We got this.
Let's see what she has to say about that. But first, sticking with countywide politics, big news in the past week with Dusty Rhodes saying that he will not run again as the Hamilton County Auditor, which is going to be weird. Like, for so many people,
when
1990 was when he first was elected to the auditor seat.
All those billboards, common sense.
Dusty Rhodes, common sense, period.
You knew it was election season for the auditor. That's if right. You saw those billboards.
However, I think the person who is running, and the only person running is right now, who's running to succeed Dusty, Democrat Bridget Kelly, I think could also probably use those billboards as well. Bridget Kelly, common sense. So Bridget Kelly, the state rep, lives in Hyde Park, grew up in Norwood, was on the Norwood City Council in her third term in the state house. She had replaced Denise Driehaus's seat. Has came out on Tuesday and announced that she's going to run for auditor. And not a big secret in political circles.
It wasn't, but it is meaningful that she chose this moment to, place her stake in the ground, because she is going to be a juggernaut and everybody knows it.
Yeah.
People are going to look at this race. She's very popular and she is known for common sense, and people are going to look at this and be like, okay. And it'll be interesting to see what the Republicans do. It's their move, who they're going to put up against her.
No doubt. And I think when you look at folks who are respected in politics, I wrote a column about this on Cincinnati.com about Bridget Kelly running, and I can still vividly remember it. I had just gotten on the politics beat in early 2016. And I was out at the Letter Carriers Hall in Northside, which is where the Democrats have a lot of their meetings, the Hamilton County Democratic Party. And after the meeting was over, I pulled Tim Burke aside, the chair at the time, the longtime chair. And I said, hey, Tim, tell me who are some of the up and coming folks, in the party, in the local party media, Bridget Kelly. And we didn't get to anyone else because he couldn't stop talking about Bridget Kelly and the good things that she had done and what she had been doing in the party. And I'll tell you, you earn a lot of respect. Bridget Kelly is someone who, it's a cliche, but walks the walk and talks the talk and is genuine and well-meaning and in it for the right reasons. And at the time, Tim said, look, there's no task too small for her. And it's hard in politics in a world that's full of egos and people that think that they can go and be from,
power, egos, power.
Correct. And go from not running or being involved in politics at all to the U.S. Senate. Bridget Kelly worked her way up and was willing to volunteer on knocking doors and making fundraising calls for anyone. No candidate or no task was too big or too small for her. And that made a real impact. And that really set a strong foundation for where she's at today. She is respected by the establishment, by the progressive left, and by Republicans. Like, tell me someone else in our world here, especially in Southwest Ohio politics, who has the respect of all three of those factions. I think Denise Driehaus comes to mind. But I think you can count on one hand, certainly. And so this is the next step for Bridget Kelly, countywide office. And I think one more thing I want to point out is that, and this is what people really, I think, should know about her character, is that she voted against Larry Householder for the speaker. And a majority of House Democrats who are in the minority party voted for Larry Householder. Bridget Kelly is...
As a way to try and get... They saw the writing on the wall. Like, he was so powerful. This is before House Bill 6 and all of the stuff that we know that was going on. They did it really as a way to, you know, try and maybe further their agenda.
Right.
But she was like, no.
She knew
a telling vote now. All the things we know now.
To go against, correct. To go against her party, to go against labor interests. And let me tell you, there's no one in the state house who's more pro-labor than Bridget Kelly, who works for the grocery workers union and has for several years. In addition, you know, that's her job, like her day job. And for her to take a stand on principle and say no to Larry Householder when the majority of people in her party were saying yes, when labor was saying yes, you got to go with Larry Householder, and for her to say no, and now look at what happened. She knew something, and I think there were a lot of people who knew something, but they decided to ignore that. Right. She did not. And that to me is integrity, to take a vote on principle, to go against your own. And like, how often do you see that in these hyper partisan times?
No.
Where you go against your own party? She lost her leadership role. She was the House Minority Whip. But did she go and complain about it and tweet and attack people and go to, you know, us and the media and, you know, slam people? No, she didn't. She just stuck her nose down and continued to do work. And tried to work across the aisle, and now here she is. And I think, you know, it seems to me like she'll probably be the next auditor of the county. I was getting ready to say the county of Ohio, but of Hamilton County. So, yeah, keep an eye on that and on Bridget Kelly's career. Meanwhile, do you have anything else to add, Sherry, or should we jump over and
just I. For more, people should read your column.
Oh, thanks.
Because when she announced, you really kind of laid it out. You kind of took us through this history and everything in a more detailed way than we do on the podcast. So yeah. I encourage people to go take a look at that.
Oh, thank you. Let's jump over and bring on the president of the Hamilton County Board of Commissioners, Stephanie Dumas. Welcome to the special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and really pleased to welcome to the podcast for the first time, Hamilton County Commissioner Stephanie Dumas. Stephanie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for joining us here today. Sherry's ready to roll with a question, so I'm like, I was getting ready to ask you how your summer's going, but Sherry's ready to roll.
We can start with how your summer's going. You know, because, you know, you're a first-time guest, I just feel like you're the president of the commission now.
Yes.
And you are really starting, like, we were in a pandemic when you're really, you know, getting your footing as a commissioner, and now you're the president and taking the reins. So we want to tell people about how you got to this role, because you're, by trade, a social worker, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm a social worker and a politician, if you quote a politician. I've been in politics for most of my adult life. So I am a licensed social worker for sure.
Did you work in that kind of at the beginning?
Yes, I worked at Mill Creek Psychiatric Center when I first got out of college. I left University of Cincinnati with a full paid academic scholarship and went straight into Mill Creek Psychiatric Center, which is a which was a state hospital for children.
When did you and you were on the Forest Park Council for many, many years, and I know you were Lincoln Heights city manager as well. How did you end up, take us back to going from working in the hospital to how did you make that transition over into public office and into politics?
Well, I moved to Forest Park, and I was the chair of the Quality of Life Task Force. And we involved residents to make sure that they were getting what they were paying taxes for, and I got active in that. Which included sitting in some of the city council meetings. And I said to myself, I think I can contribute. So at that point, I decided to run, and I was on the council from 1993 to 2005. And I was the vice mayor and also the mayor.
Yeah.
And also the judge in the courtroom until I hired Deborah Gaines to be the magistrate.
So you're on the Forest Park Council, and did it kind of go how you thought it would go? What was that like?
Well, you know, on Forest Park, you know, we have our own home rule, and it's about 20,000 people, and so we made some impacts, even when you can see a traffic light that was changed that could help with our public safety. Those were major things for us. You know, we were getting grants for the fire department. Also, I was on other committees, but I thought that I could do more as it related to impacting more people than just Forest Park. So it was a great time. We did a lot of economic development. We worked on trying to get a recreation center there. That didn't pan out. But there were a lot of, we had our first female fire chiefs there. So a lot of things happened, and we just wanted to make sure that our government was receptive to the people that were there and providing the services that they need. So when I got that in my blood in Forest Park, I said, you know what? So in 2005, I ran for county commissioner, excuse me, and David Pepper was my opponent, and he ran a very good race, a very nice, respectful race, and I did not do well, but what it did was to expose me to the people in the city of Cincinnati and the other region. My name was exposed. People got to know me. I received about a third of the vote in 2005, so I just kept the dream alive that I thought county commissioner was where I needed to be because of the impact it had on the region.
And then let's, you know, and then kind of fast forward then to 2018, and mm-hmm. then you jumped in and you ran. And do you remember, you know, why? What was it from 2005 and then 2018? Was there? Did you just? Oh. Was it just the moment was? You just felt was right. It certainly it turned out it was.
Yeah.
How did that all come about?
Well, I jumped in, but I did so much more before that. So after I left Forest Park in 2005. I ended up working in Lincoln Heights, Village of Lincoln Heights as a village manager, but I was writing books in between, and I was a federal grant reviewer for those who were trying to, the Affordable Care Act. I would review grants as a team of other people nationally, and so I was doing that. So I was never sitting around doing nothing. So my creative elements came into play, and that's when I wrote my two books, and I have a third book that's already written, and I just need an illustrator. So I was doing all of that, and the call came for the Village of Lincoln Heights, and I thought, why not? And, you know, people would ask me, well, why Lincoln Heights? I said, that's why, because I feel as if I can once again contribute to that nice, the village and what they were trying to do. So I was there for 4 years. The longest village manager ever. And so I'm very proud of that. And we got a lot of firsts done there. The first, you know, basketball court, the first Serenity Park, the we got money from the Port Authority for demolition and development. So it was a good time. And so when I at 2015, I left there and continued to do some more federal reviews. And then I heard about that there was a commission position coming open. As I said earlier, I never forgot the dream or the ability to make a difference. And so I put my hat in the ring.
You know, and honestly, you're taking a path to commissioner that is a unique one, at least in recent times, which is mm-hmm. coming up from our smaller governments in our yeah. county and how they work. And being Hamilton County is a giant place of different, these little different governments, 42, 48, I never remember the exact number. And you were on the ground level of that. And that's not true mm-hmm. of, you know, of our county commissioners of late. They come from different experience, state house and things like that, which is not to discount sure. that. But being on the ground in the county, is that something?
Well, you know, I do consider myself a trailblazer. I also knew of my experience as a social worker and in that arena that there were many, many people that I had worked with in different agencies, businesses, and many people within the community that I had helped personally as a social worker. So I knew that I had some support. I'm active in my church and other, you know, I'm involved in that arena. So I knew that there was support out there, and I felt as if people wanted something different. They wanted someone who they thought would listen to them and would truly take into account what their needs were. Not to say that the people that were there didn't do that, but I think they saw that in me. So I do believe that everybody was thinking, well, if she can do it, I'm going to try to run for commissioner. And I think that's what opened the door to some people. Now, there's lots of people that want to run, but not only that, I think I opened the door to let people know what does a county commissioner do. And it's just so important what we do, and more people need to know and to get involved.
So I did, when talking about the social work, I did. Mm-hmm. So we do talk about, you know, what's in the news, like in the weeks. And, you know, the big news this week really is really national news, right? Simone Biles taking care of her mental health and stepping uh-huh. away from the Olympic floor. I mean, it's really sparked a national conversation about the importance of mental health. Have you been following that storyline?
Well, I haven't followed that particular storyline. I heard about her and read about her, and certainly it's something that's dominant in more areas than people want to admit. Mental health is an issue that people really don't want to discuss, like domestic violence is one. But I know as we were allocating monies through the CARES Act and now the American Rescue Plan, I advocated that we put more money in for mental health. And I think that's the crust of some of the gun violence in our area, that, you know, you have people that are walking wounded and nobody's really talking to them, or they may not even want to talk to people. So mental health is an important element of whether or not we thrive or just survive. So it's extremely important. So I watch all of those stories.
What do you like absolute best about being commissioner? And I should let folks know, like, every time I talk to folks about and Sherry and I certainly have talked about it, about the position of commissioner, it's a really, really hard, in a lot of ways, thankless job. But what do you love most about it?
What I love most about it is people have identified that I am a commissioner that will listen, that your concerns are my concerns, and it's not. You may not get the answers that you want from me, but you know that I'm going to give you an honest answer. So I just like the most that people feel that there's someone they can come to. I won't say everyone, but a lot of my emails say, I'm bringing this to you because I know you will answer. I know you will help. And that's part of that social work background, too. So I like that. And also I like that people realize that they have power, that I work for you, and that there are things that you can do to make your life better. And it's up to me to be able to express that to the county, that there are there's money on the table. We talk about all this money that just came in. There's money on the table, and that's one of my dilemmas, is that how do we let people know what's on the table, and how do we get that money to them? So to answer your question, Jason, the fact that people know that there's a place that they can come to, the fact that I bring a very unique experience, being the first African-American commissioner ever in 223 years and the first African-American woman in the state of Ohio as a commissioner. So I bring a education that's different. I bring an experience that's different. And I'm very proud of the things that we have done, like the Black History Month was never, ever celebrated. Juneteenth was never celebrated. And not on purpose, I'm sure, but because I come from the Black experience, I'm African-American woman, I brought this forward and we realized it was important to do. So bringing my experience and my education and my compassion as a social worker is what really makes it work for me. The power or authority that we have, it really, it's a icing on the cake, but it doesn't mean that. I know I'm in a position of power and authority and can make changes, but it's not about that. It's about the common person knowing that they are important. And I think most people believe that when they talk to me.
I think one of your first big decisions really showed that you were not just, you know, in the seat to go along mm-hmm. with what everyone, like kind of the narrative that was happening was the Millennium mm-hmm. Hotel vote.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was very clear. And I said, this is the worst real estate deal I've ever seen. But it was just very clear that the people that were negotiating it, we had no control over. And we were giving away money to ask people to come to demolish it, to plan it, to assess it. And I just thought we needed to reevaluate the process and how much money we were giving. So, yeah, you're right. I did not support it, and I support it now.
You do? Tell us why you support it now.
Well, I support it now because we had to make sure that when tourism picks up, and it is picking up, that people have a place to come. We have the room to give them. And then of course that generates our revenue and our economy. So now that it is down or it's coming down, we need a place for people. We talk about the World Cup possibly coming here in 2026. So we just need a place. And so now that it's gone, there's no reason to cry over it. It's done and we need to move forward. Right now, we're still, you know, we're not deciding about the expansion of Duke Energy. Right now, the focus is just getting this headquarter hotel up. And this is the long haul. It's going to take a while for all of that to happen. And I'm also on the CVB board and we discuss where we're going, what direction we're going as it relates to not only downtown, because think about what Jason just said about the impact of the commissioners. Now I think I'm shining a light on, I know I'm shining a light on that the county is just not Cincinnati. It's all those other suburbs too. So I just wanted to digress and bring that up.
A great point.
So we're still looking at the expansion of Duke Energy, but for the Millennium, it's a done deal. So I don't cry over what's already been done. You know, any vote that goes against what I might believe or whatever, I move on because there's so many things to work on right now.
Commissioner, you said that it's going to be a long haul. Is there a concern that the sites, and I know there's really technically two sites right now where the hotel could be built south of the and the old Millennium site. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned that these sites could sit empty for a long time, or are you optimistic that something could be getting done or at least planned here in the near future?
Well, there's been some discussion that maybe while we're waiting for the hotel itself to go up completely, that we could make some of that land usable land where it could be another park area or walk-through area, a dog park area. That's just preliminary plans. But of course, I'm concerned about the length of time it will take and the disruption to traffic going through that area. And we, of course, want to do it right. But the sooner we get it up, of course, the more revenue we can generate, because we're losing conventions because we don't have enough, you know, space for everyone. So
do you think 3CDC will have a role in helping with what's going to happen there next, or solely up to the port?
We always like to include 3CDC if we can. So I can't specifically say that has not completely been ironed out right now.
And one more question on the hotel. Is the idea to build that new hotel on the south lot there, and then keep the Millennium site for potential expansion? And like you said, and I know that's a trend in convention centers now, is to have some kind of outdoor space meeting. So like you said, you would preserve some of that for now. But is the idea to have the new hotel on south of the convention center and then use the current Millennium site as future expansion space for the convention center? Is that the plan, or generally speaking?
That's pretty general. That temporary use of that area is only so it doesn't look so ugly when people drive through that area. But we're still in negotiation somewhat with actual location and specific. But we know approximately, you know, where it will be, but we're still in negotiation as it relates to the definite place it will be put.
Is there, you personally, as a commissioner and member of the of the board, where would you personally like to see it go?
I think where the demolition is a good place, but if we're looking at expanding through Duke to Duke Energy, it probably would have to be on that southwest corner.
Yeah.
To allow for the expansion, which makes a lot of common sense. But before we get ahead of ourselves, of course, I want to get that up. But you're right, Jason. We need to know on what end it's going to be, because that will complicate the ability to expand, for sure.
And honestly, So the Millennium Hotel, I think it's going to be coming back into focus about what's happening there. It's like why we're asking a lot of questions here about that. But it's really the beginning of a bigger conversation about downtown that has been put on hold for a little bit, which you're on this Visitor and Convention Bureau. But we saw Jeff Birding be appointed to be the president of that board. And a lot of and he cares, because the TQL Stadium. Here it is. It's here. It's bringing a World Cup qualifying game to Cincinnati in November. And so what's next, I think, is really going to be a big conversation. And the Visitors and Convention Board is going to be ground zero for that. What's going to happen with the arena? Is there going to be this expansion of the convention center so we can get these bigger conventions? And we can get political conventions. And we're really, you know, the casino is on the upswing again, with it becoming this Hard Rock Cafe, Hard Rock branded casino. And I just think the Millennium is part of this conversation, but it is a big conversation about what that looks like for Cincinnati.
Oh, it's a major component of the whole expansion of our ability to be able to accommodate all these major things we want to do. Jeff was appointed the chairman of CVB before I came on as president, right before, I should say. But yeah, he's very invested, for sure. And he runs a good part of meeting. He's very focused, and we get in and get out, but we cover some really great ideas. But
that sounds like the Jeff Birding we know.
Yes, that's right. I think it's essential that the Millennium remains in the middle of the whole conversation. And Jeff is very smart, and he knows the development of that as quickly as possible will impact our ability to be the focal point of the region and the nation. Because my understanding, as you know, that Columbus always got the invitation for the the host of the World Cup game, and so they were really upset that they didn't get it this time. And but we, as I spoke at TQL yesterday, everything that the FIFA World Review team, which I was on the conference call in March, everything they said they wanted from us, we had already done. We had the forward thinking of, you know, like the signage and how they wanted the infrastructure to look and the drainage there and the diversity and inclusion and employment and being located in a residential area or in a community area. All those things we were able to answer affirmatively that we had already done those things. So it wasn't like we're going to say, oh, we're going to do it. You know, they had seen. We had the data and the statistics that we're already doing what they want. So I'm really optimistic about 2026, to be honest.
For the World Cup, that's a big conversation. I, this qualifier, yeah. Everyone is like, the qualifier for 22 is a hint. It's the hint. That's and
I know we're talking about all these, you know, some of these bigger projects and stuff. It made me think, always so much talk about city versus county, all that. And, you know, we can go through.
You don't say.
you can go through all the lists of things that they've battled over the years. But from your perspective, during your term here on the commission and as president, What's your perspective on that, on working with the city, and how's it been for you?
Well, you know, the battle is not necessary. I mean, I'd seen some battles before I came in, and maybe a few since I've been in. But the city of Cincinnati is just one of our entities. So it's our biggest entity, but we don't have to battle because we're hopefully there for the same purpose. It's all our people that are in this 800,000 people. We're all for going toward the same vision and the same purpose. And, you know, sometimes I guess power is an issue and people want to say, you know, they did this or we did that. And to me, there's no competition. If we really want the best, it sound best for our people. So I've seen some conflict that was already there before I came. But I try very hard to be a leader that can work with other groups and compromise if we have to. Make it a win-win for everybody. It can't always be that way, and we've disagreed. But it's very clear what you see from me is what you get, and I'm going to be very open on where I think the county should go. But I think the great thing that has happened is people now realize Hamilton County is, and I've said it earlier, is not just Cincinnati. I think that's one of the great things that has happened, and people are more aware of that. But I haven't had a major problem with it because people know where I'm coming from, and I'm there for the people.
Hey, great stuff. And We Sherry has one last question for you.
Sherry.
No. You know what? We've written a lot in recent weeks about Christopher Smitherman running for Hamilton County Commissioner, but there has been one kind of outstanding question because, you know, he has to run against somebody. Are you running again?
Well, you'll be hearing more about that at another time. But, you know, I say people call me, they were, oh, my God, how could he do that? Why would he? I say everybody has free will. And, you know, if he feels that he can bring something to the table, that's his right to do. Don't worry about that. You know, who knows who else is going to run. But I'm sure you will be hearing soon one way or the other. What I plan on doing, because I never, you know, who knows what opportunity may come in for me. But you will certainly be one of the ones that that I will tell.
That's right. You know right where to find us here on So Cincinnati.
Yes. But thank you, though, for your compliment that I would be a great one to run again. I appreciate that.
We're not weighing in on it. Our editor would kill us. I mean, Jason probably could, but I.
Right.
It's just a question.
I know.
I look forward to the answer. I look forward to the answer.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've done, and I'm going to let you go, of course, but during our meetings, we take care of business. But I try to bring a little levity to our meetings, and the people really like that because I want people to be able to relate to our meetings, and more people come in to be a part of it. So that was just only, I knew you were not going to make an opinion on that, but I just thought I'd throw it in. So, okay, Jason, I remember meeting you in the McDonald's parking lot when you were wondering if I was going to win the primary. I remember that very vividly. So,
wait, Jason, do you remember that?
That might have been Scott Wortman.
No, it was you. It was you. Okay. You were in your car and I was in my car. But anyway, okay.
I believe her. I just ran into Commissioner Dumas at the Joe Biden event at the Electrical Hall.
Oh, yes, nice.
You sure did.
That was an incredible event. And putting the Joe Biden visit aside, but to see what they do in that electrical hall and what that means for our trades in Cincinnati. Like, I walked away from there that day. Like, I was like, oh, I'm here to cover Joe Biden. And I was like, I learned a lot about our community.
Oh, yes, for sure. And, Jason said about a commissioner being a thankless job. That's exactly what the president was saying. He said to me, he says, I think your job is harder than mine. I said, oh, really? He said, yeah, I used to be a commissioner. I said, okay. But yeah, I got to meet some of those workers there also, Sherry, and it was very interesting.
If you've ever needed an electrician, you're thankful that training facility is right there, because finding an electrician is a very hard task.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, Commissioner, thank you so much for joining us here today. Really, just a real pleasure to talk with you and have you share some of this stuff about your story of coming up to politics and getting elected commissioner and the work that you're doing on the commission. It's crazy to think we're already talking about the next election.
Right.
I'm just trying to get past the mayoral election. Let's do this.
Oh, yeah. So I want to talk some more, though. Is this it?
Oh, you know what? I agree.
No, Sherry. That's okay.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. And it's always my favorite when your conversation can just keep on going all day. Like, those are the best kind of conversations. So, but thank you so much.
Take care. Have a great summer. Great rest of the summer.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Thanks again to Commissioner Dumas and some really good stuff there. And enjoyed that chat. Sherry?
We didn't even talk about the banks.
We didn't even talk about the banks. But speaking of, I believe the banks bring us our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week.
I had the chance to go to the Icon Music Center last night for the Foo Fighters. Now, I have to say, I'm not a huge Foo Fighters fan. Like, I think my friends were like, what are you doing? But I went. I had a chance to go with a friend of mine who had an extra ticket. And I went because I wanted to see the venue. I'm such a nerd, but that's okay. The Foo Fighters were amazing, by the way. They started their tour here, which says a lot about Cincinnati. And they was their first post-COVID tour, and they were super into it. And so it was just an amazing night. And I have to say, this concert venue is everything that they promised it to be. It was really just an incredible experience to stand in the crowd that was a huge crowd, but not too crowded. And behind us, in front of us was the Foo Fighters. Behind us was the river. Over the Foo Fighters is the beautiful skyline of Cincinnati, true story. And then the stadiums you could see lit up. And it was just, it was really, it's a special venue. It's done right from top to bottom, I have to say. There were no lines for bathrooms. There was like somebody like organizing the beer line. Not that I was drinking, because we had to record the podcast today. I was like, this is terrible timing. But I just, things were like working really well. And it was just, it was a really special night in Cincinnati, I thought. It said a lot about the city.
I thought this was supposed to be our So Cincinnati moment. Sounds to me like it was Very un-Cincinnati.
Oh, Jason, that's not true.
That's a compliment.
This is the new Cincinnati. TQL Stadium opened. You wrote a column about it a couple weeks ago and what that experience was like. Now we have a music venue on the Ohio River in the banks on top of the Dora. It was bustling down there a lot due to the concert, but I've been down there on other nights because it's been pleasant out and stopped raining finally. Speaking of Cincinnati. And there were people outside of the concert gates who knew they could just, at our lovely riverfront park, they could bring a blanket and a picnic and listen to a concert for free.
Oh, that's nice. I didn't think of that. You could go to the, you'd still be at the park and
Listen, yeah, right? If you didn't want to see them or be mixed into the crowd, to be fair.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was just, you know, a lot of people were like, give it some grace. It's the first concert. What's it going to be like? And it was a really good experience.
Otherwise, your summer's going well?
I don't know. Have we stopped working? No.
It's not going well.
It's fine. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Take a break. Take a vacation.
Coming up here, maybe.
Good. I think that's it.
All right. That's
for today. We will. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next week.